It's been all over the news for the last week. What sparked this was that Sky News identified a woman called Brenda Leyland as someone who was trolling the parents of Madeleine McCann. A week or so later, this woman, Brenda Leyland, was subsequently found dead. And since then, Sky News has been at the receiving end of complaints for having publicly outed Brenda Leyland. So it's a very tragic story. Shows how dealing with internet trolls can be a very complex matter and the whole idea of it. So with me now to discuss this is Angela Nagle from the School of Communications in DCU, who's studying the area of this, the whole idea of online trolling. What does it mean, first of all? Have you got a definition of it, Angela?
Yeah, it's just a word that's used, that has been used for a number of years to describe those who use online communication to start flame wars, say offensive things to get a rise out of people. But more recently, I think it's been used in cases like the Brenda Leyland case, where the definition has kind of been extended to mean really any kind of malicious communication online.
Okay, so like, you know, the call trolls. I mean, I remember years ago we used to have pencils in school, and you'd stick these little guys on the top of the pencil for a bit of a laugh, and they had big long hair and that. That to me was, why are these people called trolls?
Okay, there's some debate about the original use of the term. Some say that that it comes from the fishing technique term. So in other words, people were using bait, inflammatory things as bait to bring up people from common threads. Other people say, you know, it's kind of a fitting term in that if you imagine kind of trolls under a bridge, that they sort of lurk in the comment sections of underneath articles waiting to say terrible things.
And has anybody actually been jailed for trolling that you know of?
Yeah, I mean, in the UK, they've clamped down in a huge way. I mean, we only know about the famous ones where, you know, a celebrity or a famous politician is being attacked. But from what I have read, quite a large number of people have been. If you think of, for example, in 2011, two young men in Britain were actually jailed. They were given 4-year prison sentences because they had posted things on Facebook. I think it was an event they were posting about rioting. Of course, nobody showed up to the riot they were trying to start, but they got 4 years in prison. So in the UK, they've really rolled out, you know, special legislation in a way that we haven't. In Ireland, it's much more, you know, because there is legislation already there to deal with things like stalking, defamation, hate speech. That's already there. So I would actually think that we've taken a better path in not encouraging more arrests.
Well, in your studies of all this, I mean, like, have you found that there are psychological characteristics of an average troll? Or is there such a thing like maybe sadistic or antisocial or psychopathic or Machiavellian? Or is it just a basic bullying thing?
Well, I mean, there's been a small amount of work done on psychological profiles, and they have tended to say actually pretty predictable things, that people who are caught for these kinds of things tended to be quite isolated, quite antisocial, often quite narcissistic, sadistic even, had personality traits that made it very difficult for them to engage in normal social life.
Okay, but like, would it be true to say that if you kind of fall into the trap, and you know, for, you know, you're almost guaranteed to have further merciless kind of carry on? Like, you know, if you start engaging in any way, like for instance, the McCanns that we mentioned earlier on, they're not on Twitter. So wasn't there something about the fact that they never got any of these things that were actually sent at all? But it doesn't matter, the fact that they were sent is what we're talking about.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting that a lot of the headlines said sent to the McCanns. Mm. So I was under the impression when I read, you know, the first piece I read about it, that she had been sending them some awful stuff that the journalists couldn't specify. Because I kind of read this stuff, I know how, because I study this stuff, I know how bad it can be. So I thought, you know, God, who knows what she sent to them? But in fact, you know, that's not really the right way to phrase it, because she didn't send the tweets to them. She just used a hashtag. But there's a whole online subculture, actually, of people who have a kind of conspiracy theory about the McCanns and who communicate with each other. Yeah. And the really interesting thing about Brenda Leyland is her first tweet about the McCanns was actually her telling the other people within this anti-McCanns kind of subculture to stop being unhelpful, as she put it, and stop trolling them.
And where did she go from there then?
She just, over the course of several years, ended up sending around 4,000 or, you know, writing 4,000 or so tweets on the subject of the McCanns, because she became completely obsessed. She got into this kind of subculture and she became obsessed with the idea that they, you know, were responsible for killing their daughter.
This morning in The Independent, Eilish O'Hanlon is writing. She says, the Shinners online attack brigade is relentless when it comes to badgering anyone who doesn't buy into their fairy tale version of recent history and current economics. But they've nothing on the Twitter trolls who hound and insult the parents of missing Madeleine McCann. I've written about Kate and Jerry McCann many times, and each occasion has led to intense, somewhat disturbing discussions on Twitter with people convinced that the couple were responsible for the death of their daughter and that they've been that they then concealed the little girl's body with the cooperation of, and this is where it gets complicated if not downright bizarre, the British Government, MI5, Sky News, all of whom are believed by the anti-McCann mob to be involved in some sort of Masonic conspiracy. And then she goes in to talk about Brenda Leyland. The 63-year-old hadn't sent that many tweets, but they were overwhelmingly concerned with a loathing for the McCanns. And then 10 days ago, she was doorstep live on air by Martin Brunt of Sky, a journalist who has covered the story of Madeleine from the beginning. He asked her whether she was the woman behind the Twitter account. She said, you know, you're allowed to do this kind of thing. She was entitled to it, etc. And a few days later, she was found dead. Now, a lot of people are looking at the Martin Brunt situation and are trying to come down very heavily on Sky News and what they do. Don't we expect our journalists these days to be a lot more kind of investigative than, you know, we want them to do a lot of the dirty work. Like people used to say about Charles Haughey years ago, should the dogs in the street knew whatever. Mm. Well, if all the bloody journalists and the dogs in the street knew, why didn't they write about it? They didn't.
Yeah.
Now people do, and we kind of are glad of that these things are exposed. So on this level here, surely, you know, you can't be giving out to Martin Brunt or Sky News, can you?
No, I mean, I would never blame an individual journalist, certainly. But I do think that it is interesting, you know, in some of her tweets, I was reading some of them last night because they've been archived.
Right.
And she was a massive fan of Sky News, you know, and her obsession with the McCanns came from her watching Sky News. Now, again, I'm not saying so therefore it's Sky News' fault, but it is interesting to me that she was kind of like, in some ways, a monster created by Sky News. She, you know, because they have given massive coverage to the McCanns through watching it, you know, obsessively over long periods of the day. You know, this became an obsession of hers, and you know, so that there is a kind of a vigilante sort of style to that kind of news that, you know, ended up being turned on her in the end, but, you know, that she certainly would have wanted Sky News to turn on the McCanns.
Right, exactly. So on that level then, does Brenda Leyland then, to get back to what we're talking about in general, the woman who targeted the McCanns, does she fit the profile of a troll?
No, she doesn't actually. She's much older than the typical profile. The typical profile would be, you know, 20s or 30s at most. She was in her mid-60s. Also, it has tended to be a kind of male-dominated thing, actually, over the last couple of years. And so, yeah, it is unusual. It also used to be more of a subcultural thing, really. You know, like it was very much a practice within very geeky kind of subcultures. It wasn't really something that you would associate with mainstream news or mainstream media.
No matter what kind of fake accounts or fake names are set up across the way, can you find out who's behind? Like, for instance, like in America, there was a thing where there was an 18-year-old girl in a car crash and a very badly disfigured body. There was pictures of her. And these people set up a fake tribute page and they even sent these pictures to the parents and with things like, Dad, I'm still alive kind of stuff. I mean, the absolute worst kind of stuff you could possibly imagine. Now, these people couldn't necessarily be found. There was fake pages set up on that. Is there no way, can you compel Google, or could Google help, or any of that, any of the internet search people, or are there enough laws in place to say you don't even need to go that far?
Well, the laws are already in place. I mean, in Ireland, for example, you can, if you're being stalked or harassed in some way, you can bring that to the courts and get a court order on Twitter or Facebook or whatever it is to search the IP address of the senders. But the thing is, somebody like Brenda Leyland, she doesn't strike me as somebody who would be particularly a techie kind of person, but
or she wouldn't be somebody who's, where anonymity is a priority.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. I mean, she was, you know, she put her name to it, but in a lot of cases, the people who you know, troll kind of all the time and who've been doing it for a number of years would know that you hide your IP address. And that you can do certain things to make it very difficult for them to find you.
But is it, just to be on the side of trolls almost for a second, is it a breach of privacy and freedom of expression to try and deny users to post anonymously? And just remember, by the way, that those names and email addresses can be faked, and that many, you know, write, you know, rude or inflammatory stuff under their own real names.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think that the term has been broadened out way too much. I remember, for example, when the Queen visited, people who didn't want the Queen to visit were being called trolls. Like, that was a term that was being used all the time. So it kind of ends up being like any unpopular opinion is suddenly called trolling.
Yeah.
I really think that the law that protects people against defamation, harassment and stalking is enough. I mean, outside of that definition, I really think you're dealing with, speech that should be allowed and should be free, even if it's offensive.
Freedom of speech, in other words. Yeah, OK, right. And we pride ourselves on that one, don't we? But, like, the internet is, a lot of people seem to think it's some sort of a mystical place, whatever, but, like, where no laws should apply.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a level of anarchy and chaos and Wild Westism about all that. Everybody should have a gun and just shoot somewhere. There's no sheriff in town.
Yeah.
I mean, surely there is a need for internet regulation, and possibly in this case, greater internet regulation.
Well, there's been a massive effort to de-anonymise social media,
yeah.
Particularly on the part of Google. But they have profit interests in doing that as well, you know. So I would worry that they would use kind of these panics about this issue to de-anonymize the internet in ways that, you know, will benefit them. I mean, you know, I don't think anonymity is necessarily a bad thing.
But what about that then, that the online thing, the whole idea of anonymity, there's another part to all that. It's got a disinhibition effect, if there's such a word, which there isn't, I've just created it. But anyway, like, you know, you're not inhibited anymore. Like, for instance, anonymity increases unethical behaviour, I'm sure, doesn't it?
Yes.
Okay, no doubt about it. Okay, like, for instance, like, if you're in a car and you're by yourself, you know, everybody's done it, I'm sure, at some stage, a bit of old road rage, you know, because, you know nobody can hear you, but you want to just say, stupid.
Yeah.
So that's what the internet can do for people, and the anonymity is just the spur that brings it as far as it can go.
Yeah, well, some of the psychological profiling that's been done has said that I'm not sure exactly how they prove this, but they have said that people, you know, are less inhibited online, and people behave worse online. So it's not just that, you know, these kind of disturbed antisocial people happen to have an internet connection and therefore they become trolls. There is actually, the technology is determining the behaviour to some extent.
Okay, trolls themselves, what do they get out of all of this? Do they enjoy harming and intimidating others? Is it status enhancing for them? Is it an activity that makes them feel important?
Yeah, definitely status enhancing in a really small kind of pathetic way. I mean, your status is enhanced anonymously on one thread when you do this. But I suppose people who feel that they, you know, ought to have a voice and they don't have one, you know, this is their way of doing that. You know, and they seem to be extremely angry at people who do have a voice in the media, you know, so they really hate journalists and they hate columnists and
columnists, especially opinion columnists,
yes,
etc.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, well then, like, I mean, but like years ago there was always a thing, like, for instance, the comment stuff at the end of every article you read in papers. We spoke about this in the programme some time back, but years ago there was a letters to the paper, and there still are letters to the editor and that, but 85% of those were always given out.
Yes.
And a lot of them would probably have fake names and addresses too, most likely, no matter how much people check up on things. You can't check in these things, you know, like, there's no sort of, you know, accountability for people waging campaigns of hatred necessarily. It can't really be done, can it?
Well, I mean, there are things that social media already do, you know, I heard recently Robin Williams's daughter was getting really terrible photoshopped images of what looked like him after his death.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard to imagine what kind of person would create those and send them, but you know, with stuff like that, your impulse, because it's so terrible, your impulse is to kind of say something must be done. But the thing is, like, social media companies are already doing a certain amount. They're able to take down illegal or very offensive images, they are able to find people's IP addresses most of the time, and really that's a better route than I think giving people putting people in jail or something.
There's other kinds of trolls as well, like the concern trolls, the one who offer advice, but it's only advice that's going to harm people, like to lure people in. And that it's like, isn't there groups of things like internet tribute sites, and yeah, where the aim of causing just grief to families, or people involved in forums and people throw in a time bomb of pretending to be a sort of another viewer, that, but really it's just to annoy everybody.
Yeah, there was for a while there was a practice of I mean, it's still going on, but I think people have realised what it is now, so to some extent it's kind of faded away, of setting up memorial pages for recently deceased, kind of usually like teenagers,
especially late teens who take their own life.
And then what they would do is they would get all these people going on and saying, you know, rest in peace and so on, and then they would change the name of the page, and they would sort of post a load of really offensive things in order to get it to the audience that that went on there to you know, say, give their condolences.
Yeah. Do you think though that some kind of punishment should be meted out to people like that?
It's a very hard one to say. I mean, I think that we should try to tackle it as much as possible without criminal punishment. I think that social media should try to do as much as it can to respond to reports of, you know, threats and stalking and hate speech. But I mean, I use the term hate speech, but actually, I don't think that these things should be criminalised really at all, unless it's very serious, unless it's really stalking. And I mean, like, when I don't mean, you know, the kind of threat that I wouldn't even include Brenda Leyland in that, really. When somebody sends something to you that says, "I'm going to come to your house," and, you know, this kind of thing, then that's a threat. That's a direct threat. So that should be something that the law can deal with. But I think just offensive speech, I think we should try to find other ways.
So Brenda Leyland wasn't really trolling, you say it's more antisocial behaviour.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I definitely think, like, Twitter, for example, could have dealt with her by suspending her account. She probably would have popped up in another account, but they could suspend that, you know, and so on. So I think things like that are maybe the better way to go about this.
Because, like, you know, like the world we live in, like one body, one identity, one world, that's the world we live in, etc. But the online world is composed of information. It's not matter. And you can't really get in there, can you? You can't really control it in the same way, and the laws that I'm looking for, even if I do look at things like anarchy and chaos that's there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, to some extent you can. Like, if the government, if enough pressure was put on them by people who think that speech needs to be more criminalised even than it is, say, in the UK at the moment, you know, they could actually, if they set up a huge department to go and find the IP addresses of everyone who said something offensive, they probably could do it. But I'm not sure if it would be a good thing to do.
And do you think that items like this, people just talking about it, think that too much media attention paid to trolls with the result that they get greater power than they actually even deserve?
No, I don't think so. I think it's a perfectly reasonable thing for people to be interested in. It goes to the heart of, you know, a very fundamental question about our morality. Do we behave morally if nobody's there to see?
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah, 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 indeed. Okay, well, listen, Angela, thanks a million for dropping in to talk to us this morning. Angela Nagle from the School of Communications in DCU. Thanks, Angela.
Thanks.